Hello and welcome to Open Source of Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and I am doing a solo hour right before we have our interview with Mayor Cam Guthrie, the last interview we are doing before the 2018 municipal election, which is on Monday, October 22nd, from, I believe it's 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. You can find all those details at vote.guelph.ca. But before I start talking about the election, I will just remind you, Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can download this or any previous episodes of Open Sources on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. So as I said, at the 5 o'clock hour, we will be going back to live with our interview with Mayor Cam Guthrie, who is running for re-election in this campaign. But first, we are going to do 5 more council candidate interviews. So if you haven't had a chance to vote yet, I realize advanced polls were last weekend, but if you're still of the several thousand people who have yet to make up your mind, this will be a chance for you to hear from some more candidates, maybe to help you make up your mind, at least if you live in Ward 1, Ward 2, or Ward 6. So the lineup today is going to be Jamie Killingsworth and Mark Gernon. Actually, I'm going to switch that because it's going to be Mark Gernon first, then Jamie Killingsworth from Ward 1, and then we'll go to Ward 2 with Rodrigo Galler and Jonathan Knowles, and then we'll wrap up with Usha Arora in Ward 6. So that's the lineup for today. I'm going to throw it right to the interviews, starting with Mark Gernon and Jamie Killingsworth, and then we'll take a quick break and come back with some more interviews. So away we go. Mark Gernon, thank you for taking the time to talk today. You know, we're standing in Old Quebec Street, which is technically Ward 1, sort of the westernmost edge of Ward 1. And so I'm asking all the Ward 1 people the question about like the diversity of your ward. You have downtown and all the problems that come with it, but then you go into the far east side, talking about Starwood, Watson, and all that. It's a very different series of concerns. So how do you navigate that? How do you deal with the complexities of your ward and as you're campaigning and talking to people in vastly different areas of the city?
Well, as we're on the, and I live on the east side, the biggest issue, of course, is the lack of the available services. Mm. We need to be able to attract businesses to the east end, and particularly, you know, we have the areas where Loblaws has abandoned us, and that's a huge issue. Whether or not they're going to show up, I prefer them to either release the land and let another person come in with their business opportunity. And as you start moving toward the west part of the ward, you see that diversity from the issues that with the downtown revitalization, getting a library built, the big issues of making downtown safe for everybody at all times. You want to be able to attract business to downtown as well, and you know, the core needs to be revitalized. The library is a big issue, and I fully support getting the library going, and with that, but also to attract businesses that are going to support that area as well. And again, with the library being built, that attracts the commuters, it attracts the walkers.
Yeah.
And again, I'm a full favor of our libraries because that does maintain, as you know, you've heard from many other candidates, that holds our history. They're also great places just to go and sit and be quiet. Again, you know, this ward is one of the largest wards in the city. It's very diverse in you know, the east side's a lot of commuters. You know, we have the issues, of course, with transit. You were at the TAG meeting the other night.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, you know, look with all the stakeholders. And I also believe that it would be helpful to speak with the drivers as to how we can deliver the services effectively. You know, you look at the onboardings and being around 7 million people using transit a year. I mean, it's a service that's desperately in good use and has to be maintained. You know, and we have to make sure that we are delivering services on all levels to everyone effectively and efficiently, with respect, of course, and you know, it's it's no secret, you know, taxpayer dollars are always at the forefront of making sure that we deliver effective and efficient service.
Your big thing sounds like how do you attract sort of more business to your area, and I think you're talking about transit too. The two kind of go hand in hand, because one of the things we've been talking about in this election is how you have to sort of not just have things in your ward that attract people from around your ward, you know, the whole idea of the walkable community or, you know, shorter trips to get to the amenities, but you also need amenities that attract the whole city, and I think that's where the transit piece comes into play.
Oh, exactly. I mean, look at York Road. When I first moved to Guelph, there were a few businesses on York Road. There was a couple of restaurants that have moved away. You've got, as you move along York Road, there's the old big box meat store that's gone. So a lot of small businesses have not flourished, and you know, you have to question why that is. You look at, again, you know, you look at the Loblaw site. I mean, it's just been a pain for the East End for a number of years. And I have to give credit to, you know, Dan Gibson and Mayor Guthrie at the time. They were able to get a commercial review done for all of York Road and for the Loblaw lands. So there is movement going there, but we really need to get that pushed. And we need that strong voice to get that pushed. The East End, in my view, has not had the attention that it so desperately needs. You know, you have to take a look at, in order to even just go and get a bag of milk, if you're using transit, it's a long way to the stores.
Right.
And you can't just rely on gas station convenience stores or a small convenience store to provide you with those types of services.
Right. You mentioned the commercial policy review, and I think maybe for even the last 20 years or so, we've had candidates in Ward 1 talking about how we need to push Loblaws or we need to push them out or get someone who's going to build the amenities people in Ward 1 want, or at least that part of Ward 1. I'm curious, though, in terms of, A, what do you think has not been tried yet, and two, why, you know, sort of every 4 years we talk about this issue, and why 4 years, it's still 4 years later when we come back to the next election. And I'm asking both as a candidate, you as a candidate and you as a resident of Ward 1.
Well, I can, to be blunt, I see Dan Gibson doing all the work, especially in the last 4 years. The other candidate, the incumbent, is running on the exact same platform that he used 8 years ago. And I have yet to see the motions put forward in front of council. I've yet to see the advocacy and the strength, and it's unfortunate. And I think what is required is an additional, stronger voice to push forward the East End agenda.
Okay. Once again, Ward 1 is sort of the busiest ward in terms of the number of candidates. I wanted to ask you, first of all, why do you think that is? Why we have like nine people all wanting the same two council seats, but then also why you wanted to jump into the race, and what sets you apart as a candidate?
So I think it's eight, not nine.
I don't even know anymore.
So with that, I'm really engaged by the amount of people that have put their hat into this, including myself. I got into this. I have my full-time job as well. I got into this because I want to get things changed in specifically our ward, but I think, and additionally, to benefit the city. The whole issues of getting that stronger voice for the East End and working with council, you know, I see this city that is... a city's got exemplary staff. I mean, I've met staff from a bunch of different departments. I mean, these are dedicated, great working individuals. They really care about not only their job, but they care about benefiting the city. And I want to support that. And I think that in order to actually get things done, you got to put your hand up and get into these types of races and to get yourself onto council in order to effect the change. It's easy to always be able to call up councillors or city staff or write columns and complain. Well, I think...
I know I find it easy.
Exactly. So, you know, and again, if you want to affect those types of changes, you know, put your hand up and actually, you know, just don't scream. Try to make the difference, and that's why I'm in.
Okay, well, recording this on Sunday. Election Day is a week from tomorrow. What does your last week look like in terms of your campaigning, the final message push? What are you going to be doing the next 7 days to get out the vote and get out the vote for you?
Well, I tell you, walking the streets and knocking on the doors, I don't want to bother people on their Sundays. I try not to get them upset with, you know, taking them away from a football game or the Storm game. But again, just continue knocking on doors. I've been, you know, thrilled by the support and response I've received. I've got my team of my daughter's high school friends out there. And you know what? They've become engaged, too, and they're learning about, you know, civics and, you know, why municipal politics is really important. As you know, many people forget that municipal politics is the area, and municipal services is the area that touches your life the most. You know, from the morning you get up and turn on a light switch, brush your teeth, walk outside to see your garbage picked up, to your roads being plowed, to taking your dog for a walk in the park. These are the city services that, you know, hit you and are most affecting your day-to-day work life, your personal life. And so I'm just going to keep standing out there every, you know, the last week. And now the push is on. Encourage people to vote. Unfortunately, we've seen in most of the elections that, you know, 30 to 40% vote. And we need to get more people out. You know, to me, voting is a responsibility. It's important that people get their voice heard. And I'm also a true believer that if you don't vote, then your ability to complain about it gets diminished. So come on out. You know, and again, if anybody wants to give me a call, if anybody wants to email me, I'm welcome to have them voice, you know, their concerns or their support or, you know, raise issues with.
So Jamie Killingsworth, I think people will recognize your face and maybe even your voice. But what I wanted to ask you first of all was in terms of now running for office, does that background in media give you maybe an advantage? Because I know I was at the War II debate last night and Jonathan Knowles was talking about how he felt nervous door knocking, but are nerves a problem for the experienced media professional going on the campaign trail? Or is this like maybe a whole new set of nerves? There's no camera between you and the people at the door.
I never thought of it quite like that in the door-to-door. in terms of the transferable skills, there's tons, because as a journalist, you're trying to communicate above all. You're trying to communicate clearly and effectively. Mm-hmm. So I think in that respect, maybe that does give me an advantage that I can, you know, give people a message, explain it clearly in a way that people can take it in and engage with it. I enjoy meeting the people at the door. As a candidate for the first time, I wasn't sure how I would feel about that, and I was surprised actually how much I enjoy retail politics. I see myself as a retail politician because I think that's where you have a chance to make a true connection with people. Sometimes you have very limited time to do it, but I think you need to get a sense of how people feel about things, and some of that is listening, and I think that's something I've been getting better at as I've matured as a person. I'm a lot better listener today than I was even a month ago, certainly, you know, 10 years ago. So as I've mellowed, I've also listened more.
All right. Then we're letting you do the talking today, so don't mellow too much. But, you know, Ward 1 is a sort of unique place. It runs from downtown, obviously, the oldest part of the city, and you know, goes right out to, you know, newer parts of the, like, areas that are like 2-3 years old. So can you talk a bit about your view of Ward 4 in terms of what appeals maybe to you as a resident, and maybe what you see going on that made you want to run for office?
Well, a couple of things to that question. I'll take the last part first because it's kind of the easier element of it. I love this city. Mm-hmm. I think it's a unique city within this province. I love living here. My family loves living here. And I think I want this community to retain those characteristics that make people want to live here. Mm-hmm. I talked to a lot of people that have moved here from the GTA because the traffic is unbearable, because the green space is gone. And I think you start to appreciate just how wonderful this city is, mm-hmm. and I want to keep it that way. The other side of the question is this ward is incredibly diverse. You know, I go to the East End and somebody asks me where I live, and I'll tell them I'm in St. George's Park. I'm like a long way away. You know, they think it's another world out there. You know, yeah, I live over by the, you know, by the hospital on just off Aramosa. So that's a challenge to communicate to people that, yeah, I have the East End's interests at heart every bit as much as the people in St. George's Square, St. George's Park, the people in the ward. I'm there for all of you, but that's a challenge because everybody's interests are a little bit different, and there's some differences within this ward, no question about it.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about the differences?
Well, I think the ward has some unique characteristics, but they're experiencing some growth with the development, and I think traffic is getting busier there. What maybe was the ward 20 years ago isn't quite the same as it is today. You go out to the East End and they feel like they've been left behind. They look at what the South End gets and why don't we have a grocery store?
Why
do we have the traffic problems? Why, you know, without the services to go with it? So there's a lot of different perspectives within this ward, which is really interesting to see. And it's a challenge, I think, for anybody that wants to represent this ward to try and bring those different interests together.
And you talked about, there are people who live here, people who are moving here, expecting a certain, I guess, quality of life, you know, maybe a bit slower than what they're used to in the GTA. At the same time, we're in a situation where growth is inevitable, where we're at 130,000. We've got to get to 150,000. How do you propose to balance those two almost separate dynamics, like to keep the Guelph flavor, but, you know, grow to meet expectations or standards imposed on us?
Yeah, I mean, I think growth is inevitable. I agree with that. And I think we need to be responsible about it. I like condos. I lived in a condo. I think that is a very good choice for many people. I suspect my wife and I will probably end up in a condo at the end. And I think there's some beautiful facilities that have been developed. I think we shouldn't be afraid of those. We need to protect our green space, and that's going to be a challenge as we start to edge further outwards. How do we do it? Do we avoid the sprawl? That doesn't mean we want condo towers everywhere, and we don't want, you know, monster condo towers. We have to do it with some restraint. We have to do it with some planning, with some foresight. But I love some of the buildings that are being, you know, built. We lived in the Mill Loft on Ontario Street, which was a wonderful building that had been restored. And we love living there. So we have, we've experienced what those buildings have to offer. We now live in a home in St. George's Park. That, you know, is a challenge for any city, but in particular ours. How do you keep this community keeping its quality of sort of being welcoming? And that's going to be challenging moving forward. We need a mixture of different kinds of development. We can't just have big towers. We can't just have single-family units. We have to have a wide variety of different kinds of development to give this city a diverse flavor to it.
Well, let's talk about you. We've touched on your communication skills, but what does Jamie Killingsworth bring? Not necessarily in as compared to what the current Ward 1 councillors, who are both on the ballot, bring, but, you know, in terms of what you would bring that would be different in terms of the representation for Ward 1.
Well, I think what I bring to the table is I'm going to listen to what people are saying. And I think a job of a councillor is actually to aggregate interests, bring them together into something that's cohesive and coherent and doable. So, you know, people want all kinds of different things from their government. There's certain things that are doable, realistic, and you have to come up with policies that make sense for the vast majority of your residents. And I come at it with an open mind. I'm analytical in nature, inquisitive. I like to sort of drill down and look at the different issues and all the different sides and put myself on the opposite side and then on the other side and see, you know, where I ultimately land. And I think you can't come at this with preconceived notions. I think you have to be persuadable. I think, you know, we see it in the United States. They've become so polarized. Persuasion seems to be a lost art. And I think we need to be able to talk to people. Some of the people I'm closest with, I don't necessarily agree with them on everything, and they don't agree with me, and we have lots of debates about it. And that's how you learn. I think that's how you find out, by testing your own views and do they pass muster? And if you have to, you change them.
Let me propose this to you then. How do you find the sweet spot between being someone who wants to still obtain knowledge and perhaps want to change their mind on something while still actually standing for something? Because when you run for office, you do have to stand for something.
You have to stand for something. There's no question. I don't think you want to be inflexible either. Mm-hmm. I think am I going to be responsible with taxpayers' money? Absolutely. I think you have to be. Do we need to fix bylaws and be more commonsensical, particularly in the East End with parking? Absolutely. And there is a balancing act that I think comes into play there. But I think you also, you can't just say, I'll never do this or I'll always do that, because I think then you don't really need a counselor.
Right.
Everything's easy. Mm. Because if you're just guided by ideology and preconceived notions, well, the job's actually quite easy, because you don't really have to make a tough call because your ideology told you how to do it. Or I've already made up my mind and we're going to do it this way. So yes, you do have to stand for something, and I can't become someone all of a sudden that's going to spend, overspend, and tax us, because I've quite clearly said that I have no intention of doing that.
Right.
So I have intentions of keeping my commitments, but by the same token, I don't know what the future holds.
Right.
And I don't know what different things are going to happen that would require me to maybe reconsider positions on occasion.
One last question. How are the Rangers going to do this? I wanted to just throw that out there. You do have a familiar face. Are you getting recognized at doors?
Yeah, some people do.
Some people,
that's why somebody told me, you don't need to put your picture on the on the signs. But I said, you know what? There'll be some people that'll put the pieces together and go, I remember that guy. So, you know, that was ultimately not vanity. It was like, yeah, somebody might recognize the picture. So, you know, yeah, I encounter some people that would remember me from CTV, and I'm always grateful to have chats with them, and they always seem receptive when I come to the door.
And once again, that was Mark Gernon and Jamie Killingsworth. They are running in Ward 1. Let us now move on to Ward 2, where we will first hear from Rodrigo Galler, and then we will hear from Jonathan Knowles. And then, as I said, we will wrap up with Ward 6 candidate Ushu Arora, and then I will throw it back to myself to wrap up the show, and we will then carry on from there.
Rodrigo Galler, we are sitting in your business, the board room, mm-hmm. and you actually co-own it with someone else who is also running for council, Mark McKinnon.
That is correct, and there's actually four owners to the business, so we're just two of them.
Right, but I am curious, you had so much fun watching Mark run off his feet for the last few years that you thought, well, I can do that too.
Well, I've had a passion for community building for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think that being in city council would be a great way to continue doing that, especially given my experience working as a city employee. I really did enjoy being a community engagement coordinator for many years, setting up public meetings and really listening to the community, understanding the priorities that people have. But I kept on being frustrated that sometimes the municipality would ask for information and then they just wouldn't get back to people, or that information wouldn't be used. And there's only so much you can do as as a frontline employee. So I think that being in city council, I would actually be in a position to make sure there's more accountability and that we really listen to what the community wants and really take the time to use their input every time, not just, you know, when it's convenient or not most of the time, but really every time that city does anything. I mean, I'm just reading on the news now about the bus changes due to the construction on Woodland Road.
Right.
And I'm thinking, no plans to address how people are going to get to and back from that plaza where the former Trista used to be, where the Goodwill is now.
Right.
And I think that is really concerning. I think we need to, you know, take a pause and really make sure that we're serving the community first.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to get into that, but since you brought it up, but, you know, I find that these sorts of projects, the way they're covered even by us in the news media, it just, like, these things have to happen.
Absolutely.
And inconveniences are kind of inevitable. What could be done, do you think, to sort of, I don't know, it almost seems like these things are a surprise to people.
Well, I think that is the problem. I mean, take the construction along Victoria Road. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to repair the roads. Everyone understands that. But when construction crews show up and they start filling in the micro cracks, and then for a week or two, it sounds like you've got a train going in front of your house, and no one told you that they're going to come in a couple of weeks and then pave it over. So people were really upset. And I think just a little more communication, a schedule of what the project is going to be like, what is going to happen, when it's expected to finish, these little things, I think, make a huge difference. I met so many people that were thinking about that they might have to sell their house because they expected that that was going to be the solution for the next year or two, instead of a weak temporary solution. Yeah, so I just think we need to take the time to really talk to the community, let them know how projects are going to impact their lives. And I'm not saying that the city, you know, needs to do construction differently in every case, but really just better communication.
Well, since you've seen it on both ends, where is the city falling short in terms of what kind of communications can they do that they're not doing? What kind of things can we do to raise awareness? Because I think communication has been an issue in every municipal election I've covered. It's like, we need the city to tell us things that, or like maybe find better ways to tell us things that aren't getting out there.
Absolutely. And I want to take a moment to say that I like the team of employees that works in the communication department. I think they do an excellent job with what they're giving. I think it goes back to the people that are planning the projects in the engineering department, in planning, so that when they have something that they know that has come down the pipeline, they give the communications team more than, you know, a week or two, but actually give them enough time to get out to the community, let everyone know what is going to happen. And I think that is the key. Something that tells you, how is this going to impact your life on a day-to-day basis? Sure, we have to rip up your street because we have to fix the sewer main or the stormwater system or whatever, but really, how is it going to impact you, and for how long are you going to be inconvenienced? And I know there's a hesitancy to say, well, what if the project runs long? And then we don't want to make promises that we can't keep, but at the same time, I think setting expectations is better than having indefinite information or people thinking that it's going to last all summer when it's only scheduled to last, you know, 3 weeks. And so on the one hand is more proactive communication about timelines, when we expect things to finish, and be a little more open to actually giving information to people at their front door. Now that we don't have a citywide newspaper that comes out every day, you know, I think that the readership for the Globe Mercury Tribune is not as high as it could be, and many people are not plugged into the blogs like yours that give updates on what's happening in the city. So I think it really, it's up to the city to step up and say, well, I'm going to come to your door and give you a little notice of what's going to happen on your street in the next month or so.
it speaks to something that I've heard several candidates say, that we have a city that loves to talk about the good news in terms of the corporate entity that is the city. They like to talk about the good news, but are a bit shy about talking about the bad news. Yeah. Even if it's just like, we're improving your street, you're going to be inconvenienced for X number of weeks.
Yeah. So let's talk about crime. It's growing in our city. And I know there is a reluctance to put this out there because we want to be seen as a city that is great, that is welcoming, so that people choose Guelph as a place to come to, as a place for business to go to. Mm-hmm. But we also have to be realistic. Mm-hmm. It is growing. We have an opioid problem across the province. We have a crystal meth problem in Guelph, and people across the city, and particularly in Ward 2 that I've heard, don't feel as safe anymore. If they have had their cars broken into, their homes broken into, and we're just talking about crimes of opportunity here, but it's happening often enough that it's a problem, and yet we're not talking about it. There is an awareness campaign telling everyone to lock their cars, lock their doors, remove the opportunity, and I think that's an important step. We need to have that approach. I want to bring back a strong neighborhood watch program that gets neighbors talking to each other, calling each other on a regular basis, so that we have more community, more sense of belonging in our streets, and looking out for each other. And that, unfortunately, does require admitting that crime exists in the city and that we need to take steps to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. I'll note that I know somebody who had their gym clothes stolen out of their car. It was the only thing in their car, so it's not necessarily about the valuables. But I think one of the things that maybe came out of going to all the debates during this election is what the entire city sort of has in common in terms of concerns and expectations. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering about your experience. When you started campaigning, did you have a certain level of ideas or expectations in terms of what you would be talking about, and has that changed over the course of the campaign?
So no, I did not start off with a preset agenda. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to make sure that I was open-minded and that I listened to people. So for the first 3 months, I was showing up at doors and saying, well, tell me, what are your priorities for the city? What are you concerned about? And after speaking to more than 1,000 community members, I now have a good idea of what the reality is. I mean, I knew what the issues were for my street, but I didn't want to think that that was the same across the board.
Right.
Now I understand that some areas are really concerned about the crime, people dealing with addictions on the streets, while other areas really don't feel that crime is an issue. Or maybe it's just the people that I speak to, they haven't been the subjects of the car being broken into.
Right.
But on those areas, it's more of a problem of speeding or not having good public transit access. So I know that each person that I speak to, they're going to have a different perspective, and I take those all as equal. Mm-hmm. I think they're all issues we need to address as a city council, and I really want to make sure that we don't say, you know, these are the top two issues that we're going to put all our energy into, and the poor people that don't have enough parking on their streets, well, sorry, you're not one of the top two issues. Mm-hmm. Because for them, that really impacts their day-to-day lives. And not being able to have friends over because there's nowhere to park in a 6-7 block radius, that is a really big problem.
Yeah.
And we need to address that retroactively through our bylaws, through our zoning, but also moving forward so that we don't continue to create these townhouse complexes on the periphery of the city, thinking that there's only going to be one car per household, when in reality we have three or four cars.
Right. So what are you going to be doing in the last few days of this campaign to get out the vote?
Yeah, still knocking on doors. It's a big word. I still have a couple of thousand doors to knock on.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best to get to as many people. I have a couple of friends and volunteers that are going to be helping me in the next couple of days to get out there, touch base with people that I've spoken to back in July, make sure that they still remember me, and then call everyone whose contact information I have to make sure they're getting out to vote, because I am aware that an election could be won or lost by just a couple of votes. You know, someone deciding to say, well, I don't have to go vote. They're probably going to win anyways, and that could make all the difference.
Yeah. We can talk to June Hoffman and Craig Chamberlain about that.
Yes, yes.
So Jonathan Knowles, you are no stranger to sort of community engagement. You know, you were very active on community energy and getting that portfolio going. So why take the next step to being a city councilor?
Great question. And a common question that I'm getting, obviously. So really, I've been involved in not-for-profit boards for over 10 years here in Guelph with the Volunteer Center, which is now known as PIN, the People and Information Network, as well as work with Hope House and the University of Guelph on some of their advisory committees. And then, like you said, most recently worked for 15 months on the Community Energy Initiative. And during that process, from getting the unanimous agreement of council to pursue the update, the 10-year-old update for the plan, right through to the interim report and the final report on the delivered product of the Community Energy Initiative and the plan moving forward with all of our recommendations, I had the opportunity to sit through 3 full city council meetings.
Only three.
I can't get enough. No, the reality was, one, it really, I don't think I was unlike other people in this community that if you're not paying attention to municipal politics, you don't even really know how the ward system even works, or whether councillors are only making decisions on issues in that ward or for the whole city.
Right.
So sitting through those 3 meetings gave me a much better understanding of all the different files that come before council. It also really helped clarify for me what the role of councillors are and how that interaction happens. And although there were a lot of great decisions that, you know, most of the council was very much aligned on, I did get frustrated seeing councillors start arguing between, like, amongst themselves over issues or files that, from an objective or third-party perspective, seemed really to be common sense.
Like what?
I don't have a lot of, like, specific examples, and I don't want to get into too much. I've tried to avoid 100% the mudslinging that has gone on in other words.
Okay.
But, you know, when I'm looking at decisions, so one example, and I won't use absolute specifics, but we were talking about transit, and during one of, you know, part of the transit review, there was a route that was decreased in service, and it was due to the statistics on ridership. I believe it was 11 or 12 people a day that was riding this one route. The operating budget for the route was roughly $330,000 a year. And so I saw the city staff management come forward and say, this is what our findings were. Here's our recommendations for reallocation of these resources to one of the main, like the 99 spine, to increase frequency, to go to like the 15-minute service. Because they said in some instances we were finding that half a busload to three quarters of a busload of people were being left behind when that route was operating. So I thought, what a great, you know, common sense way of managing your resources, similar to how I would in my business or in the publicly traded company that I was responsible for managing prior to my business. What a great way to approach it. And it was great to see that. In the next council meeting after that, I think it was 6 or 8 months later, I heard someone come forward and say, you know, now in order to get the bus, I have to walk 9 minutes down the street to the next bus stop, or I'm waiting here for 45 minutes. And I thought, that person, as well as the 7 or 8 other people that commonly would rely on that, 9-minute walk seemed very reasonable to result in a net savings of about $200,000 to the city.
Right.
And the decision was reversed to reinstate some of that service based on some of that commentary. And that kind of thing makes my blood boil, because it just seems like, you know, I thought of other solutions. I thought, you know, I could buy a brand new Lincoln Town Car or a Lexus, pay a chauffeur 5 or 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, to drive those 9 individuals anywhere in the city that they wanted to go throughout that time, and it would result in a much lower operating cost than the $300,000 to maintain the bus route. We could have offered them, if it really was required, to not have them walk those 9 minutes,
We could have given them taxi vouchers from one of our local cab companies, you know, maybe 5 vouchers or 10 vouchers a week, and still resulted in $150,000, $200,000 savings.
Right.
So when I look at that, and to me it seems just common sense that there's a lot of other ways to address some of these issues. You don't have to use the same tool. You can innovate, mm-hmm. and you can get creative. Mm-hmm. And that's what we absolutely need to do. We can't ignore the infrastructure gap. We can't reduce the service that we're delivering to the community, and we certainly can't be aggressively raising taxes in order to improve service. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to need to do is look within those margins, within those existing infrastructure and setup and service delivery, and find those little tweaks where we can, you know, save 50 grand here, 100 grand there, 200 grand there. And at the end of the day, those are going to add up to really big dollars, right. that are going to improve the delivery and lower the cost of delivery for those services.
And it's not that people, when you say things like that, don't believe you, but it's something that a lot of candidates say at election time.
Yeah.
And I think what we're talking about, though, is perhaps, you know, in your business experience, it's easy to find those quick, innovative solutions. But when you're talking about government, you're talking about moving a battle cruiser 180 degrees in the middle of an ocean. So, you know, how can you apply those lessons, those business lessons you've learned, to that the slow moving beast?
So
at One Carden.
That's true. It's different managing. You know, I have a 35 employee business that I own and operate. It's definitely easier to pivot. We're more like a jet ski than a battle cruiser.
Yeah.
But in my previous life, I spent 10 years as director of operations for North America for a $3 billion a year company. So the division that I was responsible for was $480 million in operating revenues, which is roughly 20 to 25% larger than the city's operating budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very familiar managing and being an executive and governing and delivering service to a large organization like that. Now, of course, even being a publicly traded corporation, we're still more nimble than a municipality would be. There's less bureaucracy there,
mm-hmm.
but it's a similar size operation, and there's similar difficulties with implementing those kind of changes across the system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I'm very comfortable with. It's something that I've got a lot of experience doing,
mm-hmm.
while preserving that service level.
Then I guess the X factor is, you aren't just a CEO or like a one-member body on city council. You're not just working with councilors who are going to be like-minded. You're going to be working with 13 people, some of whom may have 13 different opinions from time to time. So I think what a lot of people want to know is, how can you build consensus when there are going to be times, and there will be times, when you're going to be looking across the table or even at the counselor right next to you, and you're going to seem as far apart as two separate continents on a given issue.
Absolutely. And that's not something that I'm afraid of, and that's not something that I'm not accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll start with my experience with the transportation company. I started as a dispatcher, right? I was dispatching loads. I didn't choose any of my coworkers. I didn't choose my supervisor or my ops manager or my branch manager or my director of operations or my vice president or CEO. And as I kind of progressed through that organization, I had 7 or 8 different roles of increasing responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I'd get into that next sphere of influence or that next, you know, community of colleagues as supervisors or managers, or it was the same situation. I had not selected those people to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not agree on every issue. But, you know, similarly to over the last 10 years at the Volunteer Center, there's been 40 or 50 directors that have moved through that board. I've never had an outright conflict with a single individual in that experience.
Mm-hmm.
We've had heated debate. We've had, you know, constructive criticism back and forth. We've you know, approached different issues from a bunch of different angles, playing devil's advocate with each other. That's how you get to the best overall solution at the end of the day. So I'm committed to, of course you want to work with other team players that are focused on getting the same ideal outcome that you're focused on.
Yep.
How you actually get there, that's where I think we're going to disagree on the method and whether the budget's reasonable to get there in that way. And that's what I'm looking forward to having that debate about. And at the end of the day, if you know, someone says we should go left and I say we should go right. Mm. There's probably reasons they're saying that they should go left and there's reasons that I'm saying that they can go right. At the end, maybe we can go forward together and learn a little bit from each other's perspective. And at the end, what I like is when you have that kind of heated interaction or that debate, that healthy debate, it improves your argument and improves the other person's argument, and they come along a little bit more with you or you come along a little bit more with them. But at the end of the day, you're going in the same direction.
So, Usha Arora, I think a lot of people are curious, given that there are two Auroras in this election race. There's Indu Arora and Ward 4. But I've had a lot of people ask me, it's like, are they related? So are you related, just to settle for the record?
Well, to tell you the truth, Adam, a lot of people have sent me an email, and personally people have asked me if I am related to Indu Arora. Definitely not. I am not related to. I did not know who Indu Arora was until I put my name down.
Okay.
She called me at home, got my telephone number from the city's website, called me at home to congratulate me that I was also running. But indeed, I did not know before who Indu Arora. We have no relationship at all or friendship before.
Case closed then. So talk about your background and why you were interested in joining the race to be a city councillor.
Well, I've been a long-time resident of Guelph. We moved to Canada about 45 years ago, and when we moved here, the city was very, very small, and the population was, say, about 25,000. Everybody seemed to know everybody at that time, and see over the years how the city has grown, and the population has, 137,000. I was a professional registered nurse. That was my profession, and recently retired from that profession, and I was looking for something to do in the next phase of my life. And this opportunity came along, and I said, I need to do further. I need to do more to make a difference in the lives of the people. And so this is the other spectrum of my life. I looked after my citizens of Guelph, my clients, residences, and all. And now I want to look at. Now I want to look after the citizens of Guelph in another way at the city council level. So I have had an avid interest in the municipal politics from a long, long time. And I wanted to see when the time would come. And I was a frontline worker for a long period of time. I have advocated the frontline healthcare workers as well as the clients of Guelph. I have had quite a few conversations with the Minister of Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care effectively to enhance the quality of care, especially the excellence of care to our residents and putting more frontline workers, especially in the long-term care. My last 15 years of nursing, I worked in the long-term care and because I wanted to look after the sick, elderly, and the disabled people. That was my motto. And after working so many years at the front line, I wanted to do something different. I joined the Ontario Nurses Association, and I had played a leadership role in there. I was on the human rights and equity team for a couple of years, which I really, really enjoyed that. I was on negotiation team, labor management committee, financing committee, professional development, and so on, and the list goes on and on. And, you know, when I saw that our city is facing a lot of challenges and there are a lot of issues over the years that they have been growing, which were not there a few years ago, and now we are looking as the development is coming, we have issues of infrastructural, ecological, industrial, economical, and so on and on and on. And so that made me decide to run for this election.
And there's a pretty big one too, because there's been a lot of talk about the mental health crisis and the opioid crisis too. Is there a perspective? You know, I know this isn't where your nursing experience was at, but in terms of giving care, is this a perspective you can lend sort of greater
expertise to when the city's dealing with this in the next several years?
Well, yes. Although that was not one of my expertise, but I am very much concerned about the safety and well-being of the clients. I am very much concerned about the harm reduction and the safe injection site we had in the city, which has been taken away by the present provincial government because of the funding issues, and they are doing the assessment whether the harm reduction site is really needed in Guelph or the other cities as well. We need to be looking at how we can contribute towards the well-being of the Guelphites. We do have opiate crisis. People are saying we don't, because people will come to you if they have a heart problem, or if they have a headache, or if they have a kidney problem, or if they have a stroke, or anything like that. If they have those medical issues, they will come and talk to you, but they won't come, they would be hesitant to come and talk to you if they have issues, if they are dealing with the drugs. That is right in our backyards, and we, a lot of us, don't know anything about that. And there are lack of resources. Some of the people really don't know where to go and get help. And what we need, as is, I know it's a provincial health issue, but municipalities can play a big role in dealing with this issue, because municipalities also want the quality of life for their citizens. So we need to develop some comprehensive strategies city-wise with the other stakeholders like law enforcement, emergency medical services, community mental health clinics, and other agencies. How can we come together so that we can keep our citizens and Guelphites safe?
Let me ask you this, talking about campaigning, because we're kind of reaching the end of the campaign. So I like to get into these questions of how reality meets expectation. So in terms of your experience campaigning, how did you think this was going to sort of all work out as you were planning to run? And how has the experience been, and what have you learned from the experience that maybe you didn't anticipate? You know, what does campaigning look like now that you're sort of near the finish line?
You know, campaigning is very, very hard. It is tough. And I have learned so many things from people. People of Guelph have been so nice to me, and they have been opening doors, having effective conversations regarding their issues, regarding their concerns that, hey, what am I going to bring if I get elected to the city council? It definitely is a hard work. And if I get elected, since I have had the experiences of leadership at the Ontario Nurses Association and at the facility where I worked, hopefully I will bring that knowledge and experience of leadership at the city council level, and I will be able to make a difference with the life of the citizens in regards to the decision-making process of their needs.
Mm-hmm. And so as we're going into the last weekend of campaigning, what are you going to be doing, and what's sort of your strategy going into this last weekend?
Well, the last weekend, I am running fast as I can, because I still have Ward 6 is a very, 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 very big ward. It's more than half a city, and it is so difficult to reach in every constituent you want to go. I'm receiving a lot of emails, questionnaires from the people, which I really need to answer them, and I will answer them eventually. People are concerned that how come they don't see many election signs on the road. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to put in election signs. I I took an initiative from Aggie's initiative, and I had some signs developed from the Torchlight Industry Services. They were very kind. I only had 36 signs done by them, and I have put those signs mostly in the neighborhoods, just few signs on the boulevard. The reason I got them down is done is because people were saying, hey, you're running the first time. People really need to know who you are. And that's one of the reasons. The other reason was that that I wanted to provide some work and some encouragement to the people who work at the Torchlight Industries. So all I am going to say, it's a hard work, and my final thing is I'm going to say, as we head into the final week of election, I am really humbled by all the Guelphites I have met so far in Ward 6, and I hope I will meet most of you in the coming days. There's only 3 or 4 days left. I hope I will meet with you. I appreciate the time you have taken to share with me your ideas, your hopes, and concerns. My own hope is that your voices are heard on October 26th. Second, thank you to those who have already cast their ballots at the advance polls. I am Inclusive Vision for the Future, speaking for the Guelph, basically for the Ward 6. On October 22nd, please elect Usha Arora for effective change on Guelph City Council.
And once again, that was Rodrigo Galler, Jonathan Knowles, and Usha Arora. Galler and Knowles are running in Ward 2, Arora is running in Ward 6. And that brings us to a close for this hour of Open Source's Guelph. If you happen to come into this late, or if you want to refer a friend to this, it should be available online now at the Open Source's website, where you can listen to this episode in its entirety, or you can download it via the Guelph Politicast channel, and that is on Podbean, or you could also find it on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Stay right where you are seated, especially if you are driving and listening to this on the drive time. But we will be back in a few with our live interview with Mayor Cam Guthrie, and that will be for the full hour. And, of course, stay tuned to CFRU. We will be going live on election night at 8 p.m., 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., on Monday, me, Scotty Hertz, and Christopher Curry will be doing the results, not just the results for Guelph, but we'll also be looking at key races across Ontario. We're going to be looking at the London vote, where they're using ranked ballots for the first time. We're going to be looking at Toronto. We're going to be looking at Brampton, where Patrick Brown is trying to unseat the incumbent mayor there. We're going to look at Waterloo Region. Who knows what else we might look at? You really can't say. It's going to be an interesting night. Stay tuned for more Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back in a few minutes. Me, Scotty Hertz, and Mayor Cam Guthrie.